From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last November, America came oh so close to electing a woman president. Following the victory of Donald Trump, millions marched on Washington, a reminder of the huge, and around the country, by the way, a reminder of the huge power of modern feminism, right? Wrong, says my guest today. She argues that feminism has lost its edge and given way to feel-good fashion statements and navel-gazing commitments to self-empowerment rather than a bold challenge to a political system that should be upended. She says it's time for a feminism that moves beyond girl power. This hour, On Point, reimagining a more radical feminism. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you participate in the Women's March on Washington last month? Is feminism today bringing about real change, or is it just slogans and t-shirts? Joining me now from New York is Jessa Crispin. She is author and was the founder and editor of what used to be the magazine Bookslut.com and the online literary journal SpoliaMag.com. Her latest book is Why I Am Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. And Jessa Crispin, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I've really been looking forward to this conversation. So let's start with last November's election. Hillary Clinton almost broke through that highest glass ceiling. The fact that she came so close, many might say that's a sign, among other things, of the power of feminism and just how far feminism has come. You would disagree with that.
Well, I think there's a difference between the power of women and the power of feminism, and that this has become confused, that the word feminism used to mean a very sort of specific ideology. And at the moment, it's been co-opted by this kind of women's movement, which is maybe not ideologically in line with feminism. It's more about women achieving success within the society that we have now, rather than in radically reforming the society so that to remove kind of hierarchies of power, to remove economic exploitation. And so these things are very different. And Hillary Clinton was definitely a representative of women's power, but she absolutely was not a representative of feminist power.
Interesting. So in other words, the way many people might measure feminist success, numbers of females in the boardroom, for example, that's not a measure of success that you would subscribe to.
No, I think it's a problem that the way that we measure how feminism is doing is by measuring how women are profiting off of corporate culture, off of political structures that exploit the poor and reward the very rich. How much women are earning in their Wall Street jobs. These are traditional avenues of oppression and exploitation. And I don't think we should be championing women being able to exploit the poor as much as men do.
So does that mean that your view of feminism, or the correct view of feminism, should be linked with other sort of political objectives having to do with economic inequality, the oppression of the classes, of minorities, whatever it is? It's not enough just to sort of self-empower, in other words.
Right. I mean, the thing that truly liberates all women, and not just a certain segment of women who can make the system work for them, women who come from money, who come from connections, who come from these sort of, Ivy League educated networks, that sort of thing. What will liberate all women is the same thing that I think is going to liberate, religious minorities, racial minorities, different sexualities. To me, all of those movements are linked and have to have a conversation.
You raise such an interesting point that I want to ask you about, and it goes back to Hillary Clinton. And it's this, that a lot of people attribute Clinton's loss to pervasive, entrenched misogyny across the land. But you correctly point out that 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump, and that many of those same women consider themselves feminists. So what does that say about feminism to you?
It means that the word has become so co-opted and twisted by everyone from, you know, sneaker companies to pop stars to politicians. You know, now there's this kind of this movement of pro-life women calling themselves feminist, you know, fundamentalist Christian women calling themselves feminist, which is just bizarre to me because there's nothing in the history of feminism that would allow for that would give them any grounding to believe themselves to be feminists. It's just that in this current moment, the word has been co-opted and manipulated so that it's almost completely devoid of any ideological meaning. And it's, what's replaced it is this idea that if you work in your own self-interest, if you are a woman, that makes you a feminist. And so women voting for Trump, thinking that they're doing that in their own self-interest because he's going to create a country where they can profit financially, that and considering that to be some sort of feminist victory, that just shows how empty the word has become.
Well, I want to stick with Hillary Clinton for a second. Here she is speaking during an interview, and this sort of relates to what you were just talking about, during an interview with ABC's The View on April 15th of last year. Then she, of course, then was the Democratic presidential nominee and made the point that it was possible to be both pro-life and a feminist. Here's what she said.
The reason why being pro-choice is the right way to go is because it is a choice, and hopefully a choice that is rooted in the thoughtfulness and the care that women bring to this decision. So, of course, you can be a feminist and be pro-life.
So there it is. Of course, you can be a feminist and pro-life. Jessica Crispin, you would disagree with that, but speak to that point. The reason why being pro-choice is the right way to go is because it's a choice. So isn't feminism about being able to make a choice about what you believe?
I mean, that's a very shallow way of thinking about feminism. And it, you know, feminism should be a way to examine your own desires, your own values, your worldview, a way of seeing systems of oppression and how you participate within them, rather than just using it as a justification system. You know, the justification of I want to vote for Trump, and because I'm a feminist, that then makes that a feminist act. Or, you know, I want to get this high-powered job that, you know, completely destroys the environment. But because I think of myself as a feminist and because, you know, success is such a feminist mantra right now, then that somehow is – I'm doing that as a feminist. And that is a very – shallow way of looking at it. It's just a label that you're using to prevent people from questioning your decisions and to keep you from thinking about the consequences of your decisions.
Listeners, we're talking to Jessica Crispin. She's a writer and an author of Why I Am Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto, which, is, among other things, is a really provocative, interesting takedown of contemporary feminism. You can join the conversation. Do you identify with today's representation of feminism? Does it need a revamp? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And let's take a couple of calls right away. Chris is calling from Jamestown, Rhode Island. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I just have a question about, you know, I'm someone who studied feminism in college, and I'm wondering, you know, what I can do kind of from the outside looking in to help any feminists or women's issues in general.
So Jessa Crisp is obviously talking as a man. What can he do in a fight that is typically a woman's fight?
Well, he can there's a lot that he can do. He can, you know, go through the process of understanding his own desires about and for women and how those can be oppressive. He can... You support financially and emotionally the women in his life. He can fight for economic justice. I mean, it's not just that feminism is not just about promoting the success of women, right? It is about creating a society that allows for the equality of all women. And so that includes economic justice, that includes environmental justice, international. And so just pick a fight. What are you good at? You know, use your resources, re-examine your value system, and make sure that you treat the women in your life with integrity.
Jessica, when you make the point that the root of the problem is that feminism has abandoned its core insight, we're coming up against a break here. But in about 15 seconds before we have to go to that break, can you explain that?
In about 15 seconds.
And then we'll pick up after the break.
The core insight is that patriarchy is entwined with capitalism, with economic exploitation, and that there's no real justice for women unless issues of class and our economy are addressed.
We are the majority vote! We are the majority vote!
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're listening to chants from some of the estimated 470,000 people who took to the streets of Washington, D.C. on January 21st for the Women's March on Washington. And we're talking this hour about a new face of an old struggle, a call for a radical redefining of modern feminism. You can join the conversation. What does it mean to be a feminist in today's climate? And I'm joined from New York by Jessica Crispin. She's the author of the new book, Why I Am Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto. And Jess, I want to play one more piece of tape. Speaking of that march on Washington, here is we're going to hear. Sorry about that. I'm just getting a little confused here. Let's listen to Lisa. She's a D.C. resident and marcher. She said that America had become politically complacent.
Fundamentally, I think this is a call to action. I think the last 8 to 10 years, we've become somewhat politically complacent. We've thought that the norm is to be inclusive. The norm is to be on a higher level. And I think that what we saw in this election this year was that we have digressed. We've digressed into just throwing tweets out, and that's the truth. And we've failed to really do our own due diligence as citizens.
So, Jessica Crispin, I'd love to get your response to the Women's March on Washington and how that sort of plays into, relates to your thesis.
Oh, well, the Women's March was a glorious no, right? A kind of a pushback and a no to, you know, things like that image of Trump and his male cronies signing a law about women's bodies, regulating women's bodies. I do think that a lot of women thought that that was in the past, that that kind of legislation, that kind of power over women was a historical incident, you know, that we weren't going to have to go back to things like that. And so I do think that the outpouring of anger and of saying no to that is glorious. But at some point, we have to construct something to say yes to.
Right.
We have to construct a vision of the future that isn't about the regulation of women's bodies, that doesn't have that sense of power and domination. That message has not come out of, it's obviously this has just happened. Everybody's panicking and trying to deal with a constantly shifting enemy. So it's understandable that that hasn't come out yet, but it's absolutely vital that we don't lose that energy and we use it to transform a no into a yes.
Transform a no into a yes. Respond to what we just heard Lisa, the D.C. resident, say. She said, what we saw in this election is that we've digressed. We've digressed into just throwing tweets out, and that's the truth, and we failed to really do our due diligence as citizens. That sounds like she could have been reading from your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we got distracted by these kind of cosmetic changes in the culture that we have, you know, we've been promoting these ideas of tolerance while intolerance grows, and we've just been pretending like it doesn't exist. Like, we haven't really been we've been dealing with a fantasy of what our country is. And the reality of that came crashing through on the election. And now there is this sense of waking up and this sense of, oh, we really did miss something. And that time that we spent talking about, you know, equal representation of women on television shows, you know, didn't actually transform our culture into one of equality and justice.
So one more piece of tape from the Women's March on Washington. This is singer Alicia Keys, who gave an impassioned speech about the role of women. Here she is.
We are mothers. We are caregivers. We are artists. We are activists. We are entrepreneurs, doctors, leaders of industry and technology. Our potential is unlimited. We rise. We rise. We will not allow our bodies to be owned and controlled by men in government or men anywhere for that matter.
Alicia Keys there speaking at the Women's March on Washington. And Jessica Crispin, I wanted to play that because part of the problem that you identify is how feminism has become popularized, embraced by pop stars from Alicia Keys to Taylor Swift to Lena Dunham, who you suggest seem to be suggesting use feminism as a kind of marketing tool almost. I mean, talk about what this has done to blunt the edge of feminism.
Yeah, I mean, the word feminism now is used to sell product, right? Part of that is just because women have more and more money and corporations would like them to give it to them, you know. And so it becomes like a kind of, you know, flattering, oh, you're so empowered, you'll be even more empowered if you buy this lipstick kind of thing. And certainly pop stars like, you know, Taylor Swift and Beyonce play into that, where their actual kind of, you know, images tend to be, you know, regressive. And you know, Alicia Keys, I have a little bit more respect for than Taylor Swift. But yeah, it's used to flatter and it's used to manipulate and it's used to get money from people. And again, like, the only way that that works is if the actual political ideological content of feminism is drained away, because that's never going to sell records. Like, you're never going to become a billionaire by advocating for radical change.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Makes the connection with Jessa Crispin, author of Why I'm Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto. You can also read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Let's go to Nancy, who's calling from Jonesboro, Maine. Nancy, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I was part of the 60s women's liberation movement, and then women were pretty much locked in the house with housework and babies, and this was considered what women did. Few went to college even because, oh, why? Because you're going to get married. So we discussed how women had been stifled and controlled by men, and we decided to break out. And we understand that the church and the government and industries are all controlled by men and the capitalist economy, which is anti-female because women protect nature and the children. But today's rape culture and porn and stupid exposing clothes, these are all attempts to turn women back into extreme sex objects. We women need to get involved in local governments. Go to the meetings, speak up, you know, write letters to the editor, and don't back down. Look, these people, these polluters, we have to fight for clean water, clean air. Stand your ground. Stand there. Look them in the eye. Do not compromise. We women tend to be people pleasers, and we want to compromise and make everybody happy. No, no, not in this case.
Nancy, we got it. I want to ask you a question, though, if you've been listening to this. I'm just curious. It sounds like you agree with Jessa Crispin in the need for a sort of more robust, a more sort of in-your-face feminism today. Is that what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stand for nature. Stand for humanity. Stand for all the creatures of the earth.
Jessa Crispin, what do you hear in what Nancy's saying?
I mean, I love the second wave. I do feel a more kind of ideological home in the second wave than in contemporary feminism, absolutely, because they had, an enemy in their sights, and they were clearly being oppressed in specific ways. Now it's much more diffuse. Now it's about, the actual physical legal barriers have been lowered so that, you know, the idea is that if you fail in our culture, it's somehow your fault, that you're inadequate, when actually the system is totally against you. But it's hard to identify the enemy anymore. And so it does tend to take on this kind of psychological self-help approach to the world of like, well, if I deal with my daddy issues, then maybe I can, get ahead. It isn't looked at in the same kind of systemic way that second wave feminists did.
Let's bring another voice into this conversation from New York. Sarita McFadden. She's a professor of English at the Borough of Manhattan Community College in New York City. Her work looks at gender, politics, race, and culture. And Sarita McFadden, thanks for joining us. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm really enjoying the conversation.
Well, we're really glad to have you in the conversation now. Chime in any way you want. What do you make? What do you hear in Jess's critique of modern feminism?
I see a lot of things that I probably kept, not necessarily kept to myself, but definitely is a tape running in my head. In a sense that, what's one thing I'll say that sounds like, not to make it sound super girl, girl, rah, rah, but, the thing about feminism today in terms of meeting people where they're at, some of these folks, I didn't come to feminism as a black American, in the same way that a lot of other folks did. I don't even think I was always uncomfortable even applying a word just because I didn't necessarily see second wave feminism actually include my experiences and my story. So I kind of had to learn and educate myself. And I'm, learn and educate myself primarily through the tradition of black feminism and womanist movements, but then eventually kind of come to some sort of peaceful accord and seeing how my role in the movement is to speak towards an intersectional language and educate folks that way. But what I've noted, the last 10, 12, 15 years in terms of how we've seen feminism move from what was margin or theoretically margin, and it was never really margin, but I mean, well, just move from margin to center. It's been intriguing to see how folks who never really considered or did that level of inquiry and interrogation about their own personhood and their own identity kind of arrive here. I mean, the kind of popularization and commodification of feminism is definitely a downside. It's definitely corrupts the kind of rigorous inquiry and engagement that's required right now at this particular point in time.
So you would agree with Jessa Crispin that, mm-hmm. that feminism today has been sort of, watered down would be a way to put it.
I mean, for white women, yes.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of, for a lot of white women, white middle-class women, it has been watered down and not necessarily, they've not necessarily been inculcated or introduced to the complexities of feminism and gender identity in a way that that only speaks to the kind of popularized girl power kind of notion, the Sheryl Sandberg kind of watered down lean in. I mean, it's helpful for them. Like, it's a helpful entry point, but it's not the destination.
This is on point.
And they need to do that work. And they need to do the work to arrive at a much more critical set of inquiry and engagement at this point.
This is on point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let me read a couple of comments from listeners on Facebook. Angie Parkhurst writes, "To me, feminism means women are given the same respect in society as men. Pretty simple." And Tiff Bowman writes, "Feminism needs to fix its inherent racial bias. Then maybe I will consider this a legitimate and mainstream movement worth following. For now, I will stick to my own philosophies of kick butt, take names, and black is beautiful always." So, Jessa Crispin, I'd like to come back to you and respond, if you would, to that last comment from Facebook and what Sarita was talking about. I mean, the way that feminism needs to fix an inherent racial bias. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, feminist history has a lot of, you know, we've gone down some weird alleys. You know, feminism has been historically at times and still today in some places. Racist, homophobic, xenophobic. It's argued for military interventions that have created suffering and death worldwide. And I think that being able to understand that history, but still accept the philosophical skeleton of the movement and understand how it can be twisted into these different forms of evil is important so that we aren't blind to it. I think it's, you know, people would prefer to think of feminism as being pure. They don't want to look at the darker side of it in the same way that you see people who are patriotic about America not wanting to admit the evil that America has done. But it's important to see the evil next to the good so that we can understand how we go to these terrible places and the mistakes that we make.
Jessa and Sarita, stand by. I'd like to take another call. Sherry B. is calling from Nemo, South Dakota. Sherry B., you're on the air. Good to have you.
Thank you for taking my call. I have concerns with the author dismissing the years, decades-long efforts of feminists as we have worked our way through the glass ceiling in order to make impact. You know, if you are in a profession or an industry in which you can be compensated, you still are never compensated the same as a man, but I feel that I'm being dismissed because although I sat in a boardroom that was predominantly male and had to fight for the health care privileges of women at that level, it just feels as though she is throwing that aside because I could afford a decent suit and a reasonable lifestyle, even though I pursued the feminist agenda through all of my professional and volunteer activity.
Sherry B., it's a great point. Jessa Crispin, respond if you would. Sherry B. suggests you're dismissing all the efforts that she's made to make it in this world, which hasn't been easy.
Well, I find that reaction interesting when somebody takes something personally that's, I'm saying, abstractly. So if somebody is saying, oh, she's attacking me personally, they have to kind of look at maybe the ways that that they've participated in systems of oppression that they need to examine their unconscious biases and
but
know,
I think she's saying, I mean, Sherry B. is still on the line with us, but let me just paraphrase. I mean, I think she's saying that for her, making it in a boardroom dominated by men is a kind of feminist effort that yielded important results, and you seem to be suggesting that maybe not so much.
I don't think that simply by somebody being a woman, they are more compassionate or empathetic than a man. I don't think that introducing women into systems of oppression makes that system any less oppressive. I think it just adds women to the system.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're looking this hour at the future of the feminist movement. I'm joined from New York by Jessa Crispin, whose new book is Why I Am Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto. And also with us from New York is Sarita McFadden. She's professor of English at the Borough of Manhattan Community College in New York. And Jessa, before the break, when I had to shut you down, I apologize for that. You were talking about our caller, Sherry B., who felt you were dismissing her efforts to do what was necessary to make it in a professional world dominated by men. And please continue with that thought.
Well, my thought is just that, you know, my version of feminism, or the way that I see feminism, it's not compatible with corporate culture, that there's no way of bringing feminism to corporate culture because corporate culture is inherently oppressive and exploitative. And so when we talk about, you know, equal opportunities for women, that feminism just means that women are as free to do whatever they want with their lives in the same way that men are. That to me is the bare minimum of being a decent human being. I don't think you get a special word for that. That's just, you know.
What about the idea of entering corporate culture as a woman and working to change it from the inside? What am I missing if I sort of propose that as an idea?
Well, look historically how that's worked. I mean, Marissa Meyer, when she took over Yahoo, one of her first acts was to get rid of telecommuting, which is a way that working mothers use to manage their responsibilities. And so you can say, oh, I'll change it from the inside, you know, whenever I get my power. But you have to look at the fact that when people get power, for the most part, they do anything they can to keep from having to relinquish it.
Sarita McFadden, I'd love to get you in on this question. Respond to what Jessa said or what our caller, Sherry B., said before the break.
Well, I'm of multiple minds. And, you know, and one of the things that I think, I don't think Jessa's critique is dismissive of what her journey in terms of representing decent human values or feminist values as she sees it. But what I do worry, what I do respond to in terms of Jessa's critique is that in terms of talking about, you know, using the lens of feminism, we still default to trying to look at how its success is is mostly representative. So you have more women represented in positions of power. But in terms of the women who had basically held those positions of power, had they truly created opportunities for agency and economic equality for other women who are and who don't have the same kind of agency, position, or representation as they do? And that is where, and because we, you know, even in listening to this conversation, it switches back towards, again, a capitalist corporate kind of culture in terms of thinking about feminism and women and agency. We're still ignoring the core ideal of trying to use this radical discourse to facilitate engagement that ultimately transforms systems of power. We want a much more equitable society, equitable, sustainable society, and what happens in terms of how the language even of itself, you're trying to resist some of the things that we've bought into within the system about just in terms of money and capital and the corporate behemoth that basically forces our systems to operate the way they do and do not allow women, working class women, women of color, trans women, any kind of real agency so that they can, you know, so that we can just exist in a much more equitable and sustainable world.
Right. Sarita and Jess, we've got a lot of callers on the line. I want to make an effort to get at least a few of them on the air right now. So let's go to Cheyenne, who's calling from Needham, Massachusetts. Cheyenne, you're on the air. It's good to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just want to also first thank Jessa for having this conversation. I think it's a really important thing, something that I've been feeling since the Women's March. So thank you for hosting her and having this conversation. But also, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the idea of feminism as choice. And I think Jessa touched upon it a little bit. And that, like, if we just choose to sort of enter into corporate culture, like feminism being about, I want to go to work, or I want to stay home, or I want to, you know, shave my legs or not, or wear makeup, whatever, sort of bringing it down to these sort of, like, artificial, like, choices that is really not what feminism is about. It's about taking down systems of oppression at its core. And I think that that gets overlooked in the sort of modern take on feminism, and I just wanted to bring that up.
So. Cheyenne, I really appreciate you putting that point on the table. It sounds like you agree in a big way in what Jessa Crispin is saying. So let's take a call from Detroit, where Nicole is calling us. Nicole, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, thanks, Anthony. Yeah, I just wanted to say what Jessa mentioned about the illusion of inclusion that our country was kind of existing within before the Trump election, and how there have been marginalized movements that the feminist movement has been maybe marginalizing too in order to fit in with the mainstream culture, like the Black Lives Matter movement and also the LGBTQ movement, specifically with trans women and mm-hmm. their rights. And I think that they're in order in our efforts to become empowered and be heard, we've kind of chosen to ignore those movements that have a voice that are also women, and we've kind of sided with, you know, the white patriarchy instead, and that's a big problem.
Nicole, thanks so much for the call. Jessa Crispin, do you want to respond to anything that Nicole said?
Yeah, I think it's the problem with almost every kind of movement for rights or liberation, that in order to feel empowered, we disempower people who have even less power than us, right? So you have white feminists writing out women of color from feminist history, queer women from feminist history, in an attempt to get their own dominant worldview across. And it is a constant problem right now with the trans community of women resisting reforming their ideas of what a woman is based on these new experiences and these new voices. And so, yeah, it's a constant problem with, you know, with almost every group. And we need to be very self-aware about it.
1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking to Jessa Crispin. Her latest book is Why I'm Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto. Also with us is Sarita McFadden. She's a professor of English in the Borough of Manhattan Community College in New York and has done a lot of work on gender, politics, race, and culture. Jess, I want to come to you about another point that that you make, and you talk about self-empowerment, and this is another popularized idea of what feminism is, that women as individuals have their own power and should use it. You have a problem with focusing too much on the idea or focusing at all on the idea of self-empowerment as an expression of feminism. Tell me why.
Well, the word self-empowerment has its roots in these kind of right-wing Thatcher Reagan era of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, by seeing yourself as an individual, of seeing yourself as your only responsibility. And I think that this emphasis on self-empowerment keeps us thinking as individuals rather than any sense of collectivity, or seeing our struggle as women as being somehow separate from the Black Lives Matter movement, or the gay rights movement, or international populations. And so I do think that it's a terrible distraction and a way of preventing real societal change.
All right. Interesting. Let's go to Mary, who is calling from Miami, Florida. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is about, I'm a millennial, so I grew up with the whole Instagram feminist type of movement. And my question is, I see two different types of feminists that are, some are focusing on pushing girls into leadership roles, having them start off as like STEM positions in school. And then the other feminists, like the Kim Kardashian feminism, where it's about freeing your sexuality and freeing your body. And my question is, how do we bridge the gap and unify our movement?
Jessa Crispin.
I don't know that we need to. I think that there's always been, you know, the mainstream culture has always been the enemy of the radical margins. And it's always society progresses reluctantly, right? It only progresses and it only becomes more inclusive when a fully committed group of idealistic, radical, crazy people get angry enough and insist upon it. And so I don't know that we need to recruit Kim Kardashian. I don't think that there's anything of value that she has to offer the movement.
Sarita McFadden, I'd love to bring you in on that question that Mary posed from Florida. What's your thinking on that?
I'm in agreement with Jessa. I mean, Kim can, you know, the celebrity culture in terms of adopting feminism, or at least adopting a critical and actively engaged lens of feminism is helpful. But, you know, I don't necessarily need that in order to work towards my agency and empowerment in terms of transforming systems. You know, it's only helpful cosmetically. It's not necessarily, you know, does anything on a real structural and systemic level.
I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. Let me sort of follow that question with a sort of follow-up idea. I mean, this idea of stars sort of becoming embedded in this cause, why has that happened? I mean, what has allowed, in your view, and I guess you would put it this way, you know, a celebrity culture to sort of co-opt feminism, Jessa?
Well, simply because it sells product. It flatters the woman consumer. And manipulates her into thinking that by, you know, buying this T-shirt that says radical feminist or buying this cupcake that gives $1 to breast cancer research or whatever, that she's somehow changing the world. But that's the consumerist advocacy is a huge problem in the sense that, you know, you can be very self-congratulatory because you're wearing this T-shirt. You can think of yourself as changing the world when it's a very cosmetic change.
Let's go to Audrey, who's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Audrey, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering if Jessica and Serena think that there's a way to be feminist without being inherently anti-male. I'm married to a man who is a self-declared feminist, but granted, he's not an American man, he's a Brazilian. And I recently had a conversation, weird story, with my OBGYN. I'm 7 months pregnant and expecting. And I went in there crying the day after the election because I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, we just elected a guy who's a self-proclaimed sexual predator, and I don't know how I'm going to explain this to my daughters. And my doctor, who is one of the sweetest, most pro-female guys that I know, he turned to me. He's like, look, Audrey, I didn't vote for that guy, but I understand how some men would, because I'm just tired of having everything be my fault. And honestly, I don't know how far we're getting ourselves by creating this sort of dynamic where we're, I mean, yeah, I understand the idea of struggling against oppressive systems and so on, but like, how much are we really empowering ourselves by setting up this combative dynamic?
Really interesting question. Jessa Crispin, respond to Audrey about that.
There's a difference between men and the patriarchy, right? There's a difference. And it is important for us to understand that difference, that women are just as capable of supporting and participating in the patriarchy as men, and that men are just as capable and possible of undermining the patriarchy as women are. I think that this is a weird accusation that gets thrown at feminism all the time, that we're somehow anti-men.
It's probably a misunderstanding. I mean, I think when you talk about sort of upending the patriarchy, I think people can easily understand that that's what you're saying. But you're making that distinction. I get it. But Jessica Crispin, let me, and Sarita, we only have about a minute left, but what's the way forward? I mean, describe how we create this more radical feminism and move forward with it in the way that you're proposing. Jess, I'll start with you.
I believe that we need to renegotiate our value systems, that we need to look at what we value in our society, which is, you know, greed and competition and power. And we need to rehabilitate empathy and compassion, not just within women, but within men as well. We need to commit to creating networks of care. But I think that just sort of living your life in alignment with your value system, and not being aware of the way that we participate in evil, in oppression, is an important awareness that needs to happen.
All right. Well, there's the challenge from Jessica Crispin. Her new book is Why I'm Not a Feminist, A Feminist Manifesto. Jessica Crispin, thanks so much for joining us today. We're very grateful.
Thank you for having me.
And Sarita McFadden, professor of English at the Borough of Manhattan Community College in New York City, thank you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, growing support for human gene editing. We'll look at new breakthroughs and the ethical debate behind them. I'm Anthony Brooks, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston and the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, celebrating 25 years of showcasing what works in K-12 education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And the Conrad N. Hilton Foundation, working to improve the lives of disadvantaged and vulnerable people throughout the world. Learn more at hiltonfoundation.org.